Hi, I'm Terry Connor, and I am the president of the Astronomical Society of Kansas City, and we are delighted to welcome you to our second Saturday astronomy seminar. We've got an interesting program tonight, and before we start, we'd like to welcome astronomer David Levy, who has some opening comments for us, and we are just delighted that he could join us tonight. So I will turn this over to him.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you can all hear me. And I am really delighted to be here. A new year, a new president, and I wish you the best of luck and a lot of good, clear, dry nights for observing. We had 8 prominences on the sun today. I haven't had any sunspots, but these sunspots are ramping up as the new cycle takes over. But let's get to what I'm really here for, and that is to start the meeting with a little poetic quotation. And tonight's quotation is from the subtitle of my autobiography, which is A Night Watchman's Journey. The subtitle is The Road Not Taken. And that is from a poem by Robert Frost. I'll be talking about it more next month when I'm actually get the chance to be your main speaker. But for now, I'm just going to read the poem to you. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry, I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden back. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And now back to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. It's always just so inspiring to hear great poetry and related to astronomy. So we appreciate your joining us when you do. So I am going to turn this over now to Elizabeth Brown. She is in charge of our second Saturday programs, and she's going to introduce our speaker today.
Okie doke. Hello. Good evening, everyone. I've known Keith for a very long time. He's a longtime member of our club. He has served on our board numerous times, and congratulations to him. He is our new recording secretary for the board of directors. And Keith also is a member of one of our teams down at Powell Observatory, which hooray, we're back to doing some live presentations down there. And Keith is going to be talking about different other moons in our solar system. So I'd like to turn this over to Keith and looking forward to an interesting program. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And thanks for congratulations. I appreciate that. Terry, before we begin, I still see your screen.
Okay. Stop share. All right.
There you go. All right. Then I need to share mine. And I believe we are good.
Okay. I'm going to stop my video and we can stop the other video so that you can have center stage.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it. And David, thanks for that poem. It's definitely great. Welcome everybody to the second Astronomy Saturday.
Oops.
That's all right. I think I'm back.
There you go.
Okay. Can everyone see my screen? I just wanted to make sure there. I'm not sure if I have everyone's attention, but
yeah
I can see your screen.
Right, okay. We can see it.
Okay, I was missing a couple of screens that I had up, but we're good now. So basically I want to talk about all the moons, or most of the moons that are in our solar system. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine who is just basically was getting into astronomy was asking me about, besides our moon, how many more are out there? I go, well, I know roughly how many moons Jupiter has, roughly how many moons Saturn has, but what about the rest of the planets? You know, what moons are out there? Let me see. You know, each planet, do they have their own separate moons? And if so, how many? Are there some planets that don't have a moon? What about Pluto? Does it have moons? And
sorry.
That's all right, no problem. So I started doing some research to see exactly where the moons are, how many there are, and interesting facts about each one. So basically the moons come in many shapes and sizes. They're generally solid bodies, but a few of them have atmospheres. And they're mostly probably formed around their planets during the early formation of the solar system, you know, being captured by their planet's gravity and things like that. Also interesting to me was, how were the moons named? What were they named for or who? And you'll find that most of the moons were named after mythological characters, mainly in the Greek and Roman mythology. But there's one moon that we'll talk about, or one planet we'll talk about in a little bit, that actually is not named after mythology, at least not the Greek and Romans, but after Shakespeare. So we'll get to that as well. So roughly there are about 214 moons in our solar system. About 158 of them are actually confirmed to be moons. And then around 56 are what they call provisional. They're basically waiting to be confirmed as a moon. So what planets don't have moons? Well, we probably all know that. You know that Mercury doesn't have a moon. It's very close to the sun. I can imagine it really having one, because it probably, the gravity between the sun and maybe the little that Mercury would have probably wouldn't be conducive for a moon. Neither does Venus have a moon. So the first one we have is the Earth. And the Earth's moon had several different theories. One of them that I probably like the best is that somewhere along the line when the Earth was being formed, another celestial body about the size of Mars collided with the moon, causing the debris to spill out from the Earth and that celestial body. It was caught in the Earth's gravitational field, and then slowly over time, millions and billions of years, became the moon. So, interesting fact about the moon, there's basically been 12 astronauts that have landed on the moon, and it's roughly 250,000 miles away from the Earth. So here's a picture of our moon. And if you ever get a chance to look at the full moon with binoculars, I highly recommend it. It's really cool. Here's a view of one of my favorite from Apollo 8. That's probably one of my favorite missions that took place. Basically what happened as the Apollo astronauts were flying about on the dark side of the moon, as they entered back around, they saw the Earth rise from the moon, and the three astronauts, Bill Lovell, Anders, and no, I can't even remember the last one. But they're basically arguing who actually took the picture. But it was the commander of the spacecraft that actually took the picture. So then we have Mars. Mars has two moons, the red planet. Mars is actually named after the Roman and Greek god of war. In Greek mythology, is known as Ares. Now there was a common myth that happened back in 2003, in August, around August 27th, an email was sent out worldwide stating that on this date, on 2003, if you look up, you'll be able to see Mars naked eye, and it'll be roughly the same size as our full moon. Well, as you can tell, Marvin didn't like that at all. He realized, no, that's not the case. But it's still interesting because that rumor still persists, and every 22 months, people start looking to see if that actually will occur. So Mars has two moons. The biggest and largest is Phobos. In Greek, it means fear. Phobos, it rotates the opposite of Mars. So a retrograde type of a rotation or orbit around Mars. It basically has, as you can see, it's irregular shaped. It's the closest to Mars. And roughly they say in about 50 million years, give or take, it will actually crash into Mars. Its second one is Deimos. As you can see, this is not spherical at all. In fact, it really looks like a lump of potatoes. But you can see it's pockmarked, irregular shaped. It's the smaller of the two and one of the smallest in our solar system. It takes about 30 hours to rotate around Mars. Whereas Phobos actually rotates three times around Mars in that same time period. Deimos also means, the other was sphere. And now it's escaping me, I apologize for that. But both Deimos and Phobos were named after Eris or Mars's sons. Then there's the asteroid belt. Something I learned last year that I hadn't really thought about. Are there moons in the asteroid belt? Well, really, how could there be? Because it's just asteroids. Now, granted, there are some asteroids like Ceres that are fairly large in shape, but they're still pretty small. But lo and behold, there are some out there. An example is the asteroid Ida, and it has a small moon, Dassel. So I was kind of surprised to learn that the asteroid belt can have Mars or can have moons. Could be that it's maybe a double asteroid in a binary situation, but it's kind of cool to see. So which planets then have the most moons? Jupiter has 79 moons. Of the moons, there are four are the largest in our solar system, the four Galilean moons. The largest moon in our solar system is Ganymede. Ganymede is the ninth largest object in our solar system. And it's named after a Trojan boy who was a prince in Troy that basically Zeus thought was beautiful. Zeus being the king of gods in Greece, or Jupiter in Rome. So he decided he wanted to make this kid his cupbearer. So he basically flew in eagle form, went to Troy, kidnapped the boy and brought him back to Mount Olympus to serve forever as his cupbearer, to bring him wine, food, whatever the case might be. Interesting fact about Ganymede is it's basically known to have three layers, a metallic core, a spherical rock and ice mantle, and a thin atmosphere. Europa is the third largest of the Galilean moons, and its surface is basically water ice, with evidence of a liquid ocean that is just below the surface. The oceans itself may actually be like the waters of Earth. And it's one of the key places that NASA and we're looking to see if there's any life that can be found on the planet. Also, Hubble, while I was viewing one year, noticed that Europa was venting water out into space. Io, the second largest planet, I'm sorry, second largest moon of Jupiter, is the most volcanic of the moons and of the planets in our solar system. It basically erupts, has been known to erupt lava dozens of miles out into the space. The result, we believe the result of this is a tug of war between Jupiter, Ganymede, and Europa, all those being in proximity there. I apologize, Io is actually the fourth largest. Callisto is the second largest moon. And as you notice, it's covered in pockmarks, craters everywhere. It is also the third largest moon in our solar system. And it's about the size of Mercury. Some believe that underneath the rocky crust, there might be evidence of water, but it hasn't really been found at this point. Callisto got its name, again, from Zeus, because he fell in love with a mere mortal on Earth. Her name was Callisto. While she was carrying Zeus's child, the queen of the gods, Hera, Zeus's wife, got jealous. and she transformed Callisto into a great bear. We now know that as Ursa Minor, or the Big Dipper. Io also was one of the lovers of Zeus, and she also suffered misfortune at the hands of Hera, was turned into a cow. Now, the rumor is that Europe is named after Europa as well. Does Jupiter have the most moons at 79? Well, as of now, no. Saturn does at 82 moons. Of those moons, the largest is Titan. Now, Saturn is named after the Greek Titan Kronos, or for the Roman side, of course, Saturn. Titan, of course, is the name of Kronos's race, the 12 Titans. So Titan is the second largest moon in our solar system and is the largest moon of Saturn. It does have a dense atmosphere and is standing bodies of liquid water as rivers, oceans, and lakes. Of all the moons out there and planets, it's the most Earth-like.
Kate?
Yes.
Can you hear me? This is Elizabeth. We have a request from someone who reads lips. If you would lower your camera so they could see your face.
I thought I had that lowered, but all right. How is this?
I don't know. That person will have to let us know. I don't have the.
All right. Great.
Okay, thanks, Keith.
Sure, no problem. Okay, so Titan being the largest moon for Saturn and the second largest in our solar system. Another example of their planet by the moon's firm is Enceladus. Enceladus was named after one of the Greek myths as well, the giant Enceladus. He was a race that Mother Earth created because she was mad at Zeus and she wanted the giants to destroy the gods. Well, for those of you who have read the myths, that didn't work out very well. Enceladus and his fellow giants were defeated. As you can tell, Enceladus is a system of rills and canyons. In fact, you can tell that this canyon here is actually deeper than the Grand Canyon in Arizona. It is also known to have some oceans as well, and liquid water has been known to spew into the atmosphere as well. In fact, Voyager, when it passed through Enceladus, was able to sample some of that water in space. The next planet is Uranus. So far we talked about Mars, Saturn, and Jupiter, and how their moons were named after to the myths. Uranus is totally different. Uranus has 27 moons, was founded by William Herschel, and he decided to name his moons after Shakespeare plays. One of them being Oberon from A Midnight Summer's Dream. For those of you who know that Oberon is actually the king of the fairies. It is the second largest moon for Uranus. And it's one that has large mountain rills that can be over 6 kilometers from the surface. The largest moon for Uranus is Titania, also from Shakespeare's Midsummer's Night Dream. She is the queen of the fairies. And again, you can see that it has a system of rills, canyons as well. The third I'll show you is Miranda. Now Miranda looks like a moon that has somehow been put together in pieces. Just take parts taken and tried to be merged together. Miranda is actually named after Prospero's daughter in The Tempest. Neptune has 14 moons. Neptune, or Poseidon in the Greek mythology, is how this planet got its name, and its largest moon is Triton. Triton is known as the son of Poseidon, and basically he's half man and half fish. His legs are basically a fish tail. It's the largest of Neptune's moons, and it orbits the opposite direction of Neptune's rotation. So it's another retrograde. It's also one of the coldest objects in our solar system. And then finally, we have Pluto. Now, as most of you know, I'm still a little bit upset that astronomy decided that Pluto is no longer a planet. I think that they still made a mistake in that case. So to me, it's still a planet, so I include it here. It has five moons. So interesting point to me, the Earth, which is a planet, has one moon. Pluto, that's not a planet, has five moons. Now, I guess it could also be said, for example, Charon, its largest moon, could also be another dwarf planet that's orbiting or going around Pluto as well. So those are the moons, that the largest ones out there. This slide is basically a comparison of our planets and the moons that they have. As you can see, all the planets that have the moons and their largest ones are shown on this slide. So we know that Jupiter has the four largest moons. Saturn has one in Titan, which is second largest. Where do you think the moon falls on the scale of largest moons? In this case, it's actually fifth, behind Ganymede, Triton, Io, and Callisto. And then right the moon, and then Io. This is a picture of the largest moons. And this is just a comparison of the moons. You can see Mars is thrown in there. You also have Pluto, comparing the sizes, and Mercury, and comparing the sizes of the moons to those three planets. So in conclusion, I'd like to thank you guys for joining me today. Hopefully this was a little bit informative. I really enjoyed putting this together. My love of astronomy, learning about the moons, and my love of mythology all came together. So that was pretty cool for me. Any questions? And right now I don't see chat. So Elizabeth, if there's any, let me know.
Yeah, so far we don't have any questions.
Okay. Well, great.
One comment, Deimos, a helpful panel, a helpful attendee said that Deimos stands for terror.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was on the tip of my tongue and I could not remember. It was driving me crazy. So you got Phoebos is fear, Deimos is terror. The two sons that always went to war with Ares or Mars when he was on the battlefield.
And I also think, Keith, probably in your research about those, there's been speculation that they are actually captured asteroids.
Which,
more
yes.
than because of their shape and weirdness.
Hey, exactly. Like I said, Phoebos is doomed. Who knows? Deimos could end that same route. But of course, it's doomed not in our lifetime. Well, some of you actually might be alive in 50 million years to see it. But.
Well, Keith, I have a question for you. Can you go back to the previous slide?
Okay.
Okay. So my question is about if you look at Jupiter's moons, at Ganymede and Callisto, they look similar to Earth's moon that's kind of marked by craters and look fairly barren.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Io and Europa, they don't look the same? Do you know the science behind why moons around the same planet look so different?
Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that. I'll be glad to research to find out. That's a good question. If they all formed about the same time, what was making up the density or the composition of each moon? So it could
I think part of it is the chemical composition is different on the different moons.
Right.
And also I think Io, which has got to be one of the ugliest things you'll ever look at, is due to the volcanic activity. And the other, you were talking about Callisto, or they're all, each one is different and unique. And I think part of the thing is the Yeah, someone was saying Iowa is rockier and they get more icy as they go out. Thank you, Larry, for that comment. Yeah. And also you've got the tremendous pull of Jupiter's gravity,
exactly,
which also stretches those moons as well.
Exactly.
And that accounts for it too.
In fact, that's a lot of the reason that Io is one of the most active volcanoes in our solar system. Interesting fact though, the largest volcano is actually not on Io. It's right. Actually on Mars.
Yep.
Which is called Olympus Mons.
Well, I have one more question. You talked about Phobos being having retrograde orbit basically around Mars. Mm-hmm. Do we know why it does that?
Probably when it was captured. The explanation that I've understood is just when it was captured, that's the way it started. I can do more research on that because I'll be giving this program again in August down at the observatory, mm-hmm. August 21st. Everyone, I'd be glad to see you down there. That would be awesome. So I'll do some more research to find out for sure. The same with, was it the one around Neptune? Why does that go the opposite?
Yeah.
But then again, Neptune also has a weird orbit in itself. So in fact, there's times we always thought that Pluto was the farthest out there, but there's times of the year that Neptune is actually the farthest out there. So.
I don't recall, Keith, because my attention was to a phone call I received. Did you mention that at this point, I think Pluto has 5 moons?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Yeah, and most of them are icy rocks, probably like Pluto.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, they can be considered probably dwarf planets, which Pluto right now, wrongly in my opinion, is considered a dwarf planet, because they also consider some of the asteroids like Ceres a dwarf planet. So
well, I have one more question for you from Marty Rosenberg. It says, which moons are priorities for NASA study?
In this case, I would say the moon that's probably the most is Europa, because in our solar system besides Earth, it is the one object out there that has the most possibility of having life. Now, that type of life would probably be like organisms or things like that can develop to more complex life. But because it's basically a water moon, that one would be the most. Titan would also be there because it also has a lot of water and is roughly the same, you know, it's got a large body of water. So that would be another area that NASA has been looking at.
And I know this is beyond the scope of your presentation, but do you know what probes NASA has out there now looking at those?
I know that both Voyagers, at least one of them's out of the solar system. The other one is either at Pluto or on its way out. Cassini was on Saturn, but I think it crashed in, if I remember correctly, into Saturn. So mm-hmm. At this point, I'm not sure if there's any that's actually going out that way. Unless Juno, which if I remember correctly, was a satellite or a probe that was going around Jupiter.
Juno is actually active right now. You're right. Absolutely right, Keith.
But that's also a good thing I can add to this presentation.
We have a comment from Larry Levosky about Phobos orbit is prograde, but orbit period less than one Mars day. Moves retrograde through Mars sky. So if you're on Mars, it looks one way, you're out at Hubble, it looks another, I guess.
Got it.
Interesting.
And I'm very glad that Larry is here. I used to work with Larry Levosky at the Lunar Lab, and it's wonderful that he's here tonight.
Great, we appreciate your comments, Larry. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Every time I give this program, I learn new things I can add to it.
I know what you mean.
last year, I didn't know about, or if I did, I've forgotten about it, that there are people that thought that Mars would be able to be seen as huge as a full moon, August 27th of that year. It's like, wow, but no.
I know that that crazy rumor goes around, like you said, every time we approach Mars in our closest orbits, you know, we warn all of our members that you're probably going to hear from somebody from the public about that ridiculous rumor.
Yeah, and don't be surprised if you actually receive an email, because they're still out there. Great. Any other questions then?
I don't see any on the chat side or...
And I just see a comment on from Facebook Live. A person agrees that Pluto should still be a planet.
Awesome. Thank you very much. That's awesome.
I have a comment.
Go ahead, David.
The part of the talk I was able to hear reminded me of two things. One, when I first relocated to Arizona, was the same weekend that Pioneer was going past Saturn. And I remember the person at JPL did the announcement, and he says, "Well, we're having fun with Pioneer Venus today." And everyone in the audience was looking at him, and he said, "Whoops, long day, Saturn." And the other thing was that when I was observing once with one of the telescopes up at Kitt Peak, I was actually able to see Phobos by moving Mars out of the field. I was able to see Phobos, and that I'll never forget that little tiny lovely moon.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw four Jupiter's moons around Jupiter through the large telescope at Powell. That's probably one of the best sights I've ever seen through the telescope.
Well, all right. I'm not seeing any more questions. So last call, any Elizabeth, you see anything?
Nope, I don't.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks, well, Keith.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, Keith.
My pleasure, thanks for joining us. Again, I look forward to seeing you all out at Powell on August 21st.
All right, sounds great. And I'm going to stop your video. David, we thank you for joining us again tonight. And just for everybody who's watching tonight, keep in mind that on the, let me find the right date here, the 24th of July, Saturday, the 24th of July, is the next general meeting of the Astronomical Society. And our featured speaker for that evening will be David Levy. And he will be expanding on his the book he wrote, A Night Watchman's Journey. And we look forward to hearing about part one and part two in that book. We hope that you can join us. And as always, if you can join us down at Powell Observatory, we are open on the first and third Saturdays of every month. And unless it is raining, even if it's cloudy, we will be open down at Powell Observatory. All activities are outside. So make sure you bring your lawn chairs, your blankets, some bug spray. The gates open at 8 o'clock at night, and then the presentation starts around dusk. And we are also projecting images taken through our 30-inch telescope outside, and then explaining what we're looking at. And there are some distinct advantages, I think, in seeing those images that have been taken through a camera with the longer exposure, because you can see some beautiful colors and some details that you don't get if you are just looking through the eyepiece yourself. So if you can't join us for our general meeting, then please come on down to Powell and visit us. And
and also Terry.
Yeah.
Yeah, the next second Saturday will be, program will be August the 14th at 7 p.m. We have Gerald Williams, who's going to talk about ancient astronomers.
Super.
So that's our next talk on August the 14th. So that's it.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a great evening. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.